A major criticism you hear about the Green Party, and one that came up last night, is that the values you stand for, people say, are too idealistic and therefore unrealistic. So what keeps you going in the face of so much negativity and general ignorance when it comes to your work?
You know, I feel like the obstacles I face are tiny compared to the obstacles of young people who are in debt, you know, who are carrying around $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 worth of debt and don't have jobs, or at most they're, you know, they're working minimum wage jobs, and many of them, and the price of housing is skyrocketing and they don't have health care. You know, I feel like my life is easy street compared to that. And I feel like if I can't fight, how can they fight, you know? And I refuse to abandon a generation any more than I would abandon my own kids. You know, I feel like as a parent, as an adult in this society, having allowed this to happen, we cannot inflict this death sentence, really. And it is. It's not only the economy, the debt, Wall Street, which is about to crash on us again. The banks are even bigger than ever and more ready to fail. You know, the climate that's in meltdown, the wars that are expanding. It doesn't have to be this way. We can solve this. And the problem is that the foxes are in charge of the chicken coop. We need to get the foxes out and we can go about solving this. And the one thing, more than anything, Rachel, that really keeps me going is knowing that there are 43 million young people out there who are in debt. And if they get word that they can come out and vote for the only candidate who will cancel debt, and that's my campaign, we have enough to actually win this race. 43 million is a plurality of the presidential vote in a three-way race. So we actually have the power in our hands to do this. It's all a matter of getting the word out. Young people are the best positioned to self-mobilize and to spread the word on social media and so on. So we know how to do this. The president has enormous power to make it happen. And the millennials are the ones who can come out and take over this election, not only to end debt, but to advance an agenda that creates an America and a world that works for all of us.
And so just to take it back to Illinois here, it's no secret the state is in a fiscal mess, has no budget. Politicians are in a fight over union rights and education funding, among many other things. We have a Republican governor and Democratic legislative leaders who not only can't see eye to eye, but don't even seem interested in being in the same room. How could more Green Party representation or maybe third party representation in general in the state help?
Great. And, you know, what you see here is two incredibly dysfunctional parties. They don't work together, but they don't work independently either, because they've both become, puppets of their big money sponsors. So they're not bringing their human vision and capabilities to the table. They're coming representing their special interests. So they don't have bargaining power. They also don't have reasoning power. They're not coming with their hearts. They're coming to put profit over people. And that's a real problem. Democracy needs, values, and it needs a moral compass. The Green Party can do that because we are not the creature of, you know, big billionaire interests. And I just want to point out that the Democratic legislature, as I understand, has a supermajority so that they could just go ahead and legislate and override vetoes. But they don't even do that. So, you know, a pox on both of their houses. This is what the American people already feel. The American people are entitled to hear about their real alternatives. You know, the campaigns that are thriving right now inside the Democrats and Republicans are both outsider campaigns, you know, which are hardly fitting inside the pigeonholes of those parties anyhow. You know, we really need to liberate people's choice, provide more voices, more choices. When we get to the microphone as Greens, we generally win because we are speaking a public interest agenda for jobs, for health care as a human right. This is not an idealistic agenda. I mean, it happens to be a values-based agenda, but it's actually a very pragmatic agenda. What they're, you know, advocating is an extremist, corporatist agenda, which has a proven track record, and that is of throwing us all under the bus and creating a world that pretty soon no one is going to be able to live in. So it's not only the values-based decision to leave that behind, It is the practical thing to do. We can actually, you know, create a world that works, and we've got blueprints that can do it. Our Green New Deal, for example, which would solve the crisis of the economy and the climate hand in hand, it's based on a real thing, the New Deal that we actually used to get out of the Great Depression. We can bring that back now and make it green so that we're curing the climate crisis at the same time that we cure the economic crisis.
How do you see the current climate affecting just the way people think about politicians right now?
Yeah, you know, as the scumbags that political class has become, you know, they really have. In many ways, Donald Trump is sort of the logical extension of where this political system has gone. You know, the Republican Party has been playing the race card under the radar for quite some time. And, you know, Trump is just a little bit more extreme and explicit about it. But the Democrats, for that matter, you know, they are the party of deportation and detention and night raids, for that matter, against immigrants. So, you know, all of them, I think, have really done a disservice to the basic human values that society depends on. You know, and one thing we say in our campaign is, if you think we have an immigration crisis, we don't need a wall. How about we stop causing it? Let's just stop invading other countries and overthrowing democracy and creating regime change, you know, which creates the violence and the poverty and the chaos from which people are fleeing. You know, these are refugee crises essentially. And it's not just in the Middle East. It's also right here because the U.S. has exercised regime change and supported CIA coups and has been training death squads through the so-called School of the Americas. And specifically, the countries that most people have been fleeing from recently, coming to the U.S. from Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras, these are all countries in which the U.S. Either sanctioned coups or supported them or was part of them, actually. So, you know, let's stop creating this immigration crisis. But, you know, more broadly, I think this underscores why we need to stand up, you know, in the face of fascism or proto-fascism, you know, this rampant hate, racism, xenophobia. It's really important that we stand up as a society for the values that we represent, and that when we go to vote, it's really important that we bring our values, you know, to democracy. Democracy doesn't exist in a vacuum. It needs voices. It needs values. It needs a moral compass. And we have to be that moral compass. You can't just go and vote against what you're afraid of, which is what we're told to do all the time, to vote our fears rather than our deeply held beliefs, because the politics of fear has brought us everything we were afraid of. All the reasons you've been told to vote for the lesser evil is what we've gotten. All those things like the offshoring of our jobs and the attack on immigrants and the expanding wars and the meltdown of the climate, we've gotten it by the droves because we allowed our moral vision to be silenced. You know, we have to be heard. And at the end of the day, we have to reject the lesser evil in order to stand up and fight for the greater good. And that's where we need to set our sights, and we need to go for that greater good and the values that will get us there. Don't be talked out of standing up for your values. If people are worried about, you know, the so-called dividing of the vote, we can actually change that in a heartbeat. There's a voting reform called ranked choice voting. It's already used in many major cities around the U.S. and other countries around the world. It allows you to rank your choices. So if you want to vote for an underdog who represents your values, you can do that without having to worry about it. That's your number one vote. And if your first choice loses, your vote is automatically reassigned to your second choice. So we could pass this at the state level. We could change how we vote to get rid of that. We shouldn't make a democracy on life support even sicker by eliminating the voice that really represents our values. So it's don't let yourself be intimidated into political silence. We have to stand up. And if they're concerned about splitting the vote, well, they can fix it. The dominant parties can fix it. They don't want to fix it because they want to use fear to keep throwing us under the bus. So we got to stand up. We got to be the ones to take our future back into our own hands. And the minute we realize that, we actually have the power. In the words of Alice Walker, the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. We actually have that power. We got to use that power. Don't let them talk us out of it. This is the Hail Mary moment. The clock is ticking. We got to stand up and do it now. We can create the America and the future that we deserve. It's in our hands.
There's this fight for minority votes right now, which air quotes, because the minority is becoming the majority of our population, right? Mm-hmm. So what does the Green Party do to reach out to groups like Black Lives Matter, or how do you address the concerns of racial inequality?
Great point. And it needs to be done. As far as I'm concerned, it's a part of everything that we do, because the issue is not just violence in policing, you know, or racism in policing. It's in the courts, it's in the prison system, it's in housing segregation, which has come back, it's in school segregation, which has come back. It's really pervasive in all aspects of society. So, you know, we have plans. We have specific plans for police review boards, for investigators, full-time investigators, to hold all cases of abuse and death and injury at the hands of police, to investigate all of them and to hold perpetrators accountable. You know, we're also calling for an end to the war on drugs, to treat drug addiction and substance abuse as a health problem, not as a criminal problem, and to return people who shouldn't have been put in jail in the first place back to their families and their communities, and provide job training and jobs, for that matter. You know, we're calling for pervasive economic solutions for bringing jobs to those communities, the communities of color, which have the highest rates of unemployment to start with, for equitable school funding to ensure that all communities have a level playing field and high-quality education, to put an end to high-stakes testing, which is especially harmful for challenged learners in disadvantaged communities. We need to be teaching to the whole student for lifetime learning and put a cap on school classroom size. We know how to provide good education, and we have the resources to do it, because when you're implementing a Green New Deal and you have 100% clean renewable energy right here at home, you can no longer justify these wars for oil, and you can cut the military budget, which is costing us $1 trillion a year right now. It's 54% of our discretionary budget is the military, which is making us less secure, not more secure. We're calling for a peace offensive. We need to put a weapons embargo on this flamethrower that we are applying to the Middle East. Let's stop weaponizing everybody, and let's seize the bank accounts of those countries who are actually funding terrorism. And Hillary Clinton herself identified the Saudis as the major source of this funding of global terrorist jihadi organizations. So we know how to do this. We can use our dollars far more better. And it turns out when we green our energy system and our food system, we get so much healthier. It actually pays the costs of those transitions. So we can do this right, and we can do it in a way that benefits everyone, especially the most vulnerable communities, and that is the communities of color in this country.
Dr. Jill Stein has been speaking with us. She is the candidate for president representing the Green Party. Thank you for speaking with us today. Just wondering, do you envision continuing to run for political office, or could you see yourself doing something else someday?
You know, I often ask myself, what's a nice doctor like me doing in a godforsaken place, like running for political office? But, you know, I am happy to go wherever I can be most useful, put it this way. I am a mother on fire, you know, and right now I see a world that our children cannot live in, and it's not going to last very much longer, and the accounting is probably going to happen on our time. You know, the crash of the climate, for example, and the massive sea level rise, or the collapse of the marine food chain, or the loss of the pollinators, you know, which we've been warned about now recently by the UN, which our food supply depends on. You know, these are hits that civilization is not going to survive. And this is not a world that I, in good conscience, can leave to my kids. And my kids are only going to do as well as all kids. You know, all kids are on this boat together, as all people are. And, you know, I'm committed to fighting till the end, you know, to create an America and a world that works for all of us. However I can best be of service, you know, I'll be there.